Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 13 of the Plus 3 Podcast of Nerdiness. I'm Evan.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ryan.
And we're here to bring you all things nerdy. For today's episode, we're excited to bring you a topic recommendation from our Discord. Greyduck in the Discord has said, TCGs, CCGs, LCGs, what's the state of the industry? Are card games back? Were they ever gone? Has Keyforge changed everything? So we're going to talk about card games, trading card games, collectible card games, and all things related to that. So we're excited to get to that. You guys know, if you've been listening, that we're huge fans of Keyforge. So we're going to talk about just card games in general and if Keyforge has changed some things and really dive into that topic. So we're excited to get to that. But before we do that, we will give you our updates and some news. So let's go ahead and get started. Derek, what have you been up to?
Yeah, I've been doing quite a bit. First of all, I played Burgle Bros with some friends the other night. We had two people not show for our Pathfinder game, so we decided to play a board game. And I had been wanting to play Burgle Bros for a long time. I've heard a lot of good things. It is a co-op game. You are all members of a heist team, and you're trying to steal various goods. It plays similar to like Forbidden Island or Forbidden Desert, but everything's like way more complex. I mean, it's not super complex, but it's just kind of, there's more complexity to it. And it's a better game in my opinion. So you, like we did a heist at a bank. So there are three like different floors, and on each floor there will be 16 room tiles that are all like flipped over face down. So you can't see what they are. And you've randomly placed like walls that you have to move around, and each floor will have a guard on it. And depending on like the lowest floor, the guard only moves two spaces per turn. The second floor, he moves three spaces per turn. But you flip over a card that says which spot the guard is going to move to. So you can kind of guess where, like the path he's going to take and try to evade it. But as you go through more and more, cards and everything, the guards get faster. And so you have to move around and you have to peek into the different rooms and flip them over. And so different rooms will have different abilities, essentially. Like some of the rooms are just like alarms, basically. So if there's like a handprint, like a hand identification alarm, like if you move into that room at all, an alarm goes off and the guard will like change his path and come straight there. But then there are some rooms that's like, it's like a laser room. So you have to use two movement to get into that room rather than one movement. If you only use one movement, the alarm will go off, like as if you have to like dodge the lasers and move very quietly as you're getting in there. But yeah, on each floor, you're looking for a safe. And once you find the safe, you have to roll dice to try to open the safe. And you can only open the safe if all the rooms in the same like column and row have been revealed, and then you have to roll a specific numbers based on those rooms. So you do have to explore the whole like floor almost before you can start to try to unlock the safe. And man, this game was tough. Because once you open the safe, you get a treasure. Well, all the treasures have bad effects. Like the first one was just like, it was a cursed goblet. And so basically you lose one of your stealth tokens. Everybody starts the game with three stealth tokens. If you run into a guard, you lose a stealth token. If you have none left and you run into a guard, game over. Like if one person gets knocked out, everybody loses. So you have to try to protect each other. You have to move up to different floors to like, cause if you end your turn on a floor, that floor's guard will move. So you're trying to like protect each other from the guards. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. We made it all the way to the third floor, and we had two treasures and we were trying to get the third one, and we got really unlucky with some card flips and we lost. But Burgle Bros, I definitely recommend checking that one out. It's a lot of fun.
And that one is on Tabletopia, right? We discovered that last night.
Yes, we discovered that last night. Yeah, we're going to have to try it out because I can teach it in a few seconds. It's very fun, but it's very difficult.
It sounds fun. I love the Forbidden games, so I want to check that one out with you sometime.
Yeah, when I played this, I thought of you right away because I figured you would really like this. Next, I finally defeated the Elite Four in Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu. I know it took me a long time. I was taking it slow, and I was trying to fight every gym at the appropriate level. I was trying to not overlevel my Pokemon and have like a whole, like I had like three different teams. It was a little obnoxious. But yeah, I beat the Elite Four. But the problem with keeping my Pokemon at the appropriate level is they're all level 50 for the Elite Four. Well, now I have to go defeat Mewtwo so I can catch him. Well, he's level 70. And he takes out all of my Pokemon in one hit. So I'm going to need to do some grinding before I can get Mewtwo and then complete my Pokedex. But yeah, I still love the game. It was my game of the year last year. It's fantastic. Next, I finished up Secret Empire Opening Salvo, and now I'm moving on to the main event. I talked about that a little bit in the last episode, and this is your reminder, your bi-monthly reminder to go get Marvel Unlimited. It's great. Evan and I were just talking about it before we started recording, and I said, you know, I don't know how I would try to read Secret Empire without the curated event list, because it is really all over the place. I think I've read one actual Secret Empire comic, and all the other ones have been pulled from different storylines, like Cap and Falcon and Black Widow. But yeah, it's made it very enjoyable to follow like these events and very easy to do. So yeah, Marvel Unlimited, it's great. The one thing about Secret Empire that's rough is Cap is the bad guy, and that's hard for me. It's really hard to not be rooting for Cap even when he's like Hail Hydra-ing. It's been interesting. Because the main protagonist right now is Iron Man, and that's even harder for me.
Oh boy! So, yeah, we all know you love Iron Man.
But no, I mean, it's Iron Man and Captain Marvel are like the two. So I love Captain Marvel, which I'll talk about that now. I went and saw Captain Marvel. I will not give any spoilers, but I really, really enjoyed the movie. It felt very authentic to like the 90s theme and time frame. The Stan Lee cameo was just wonderful, and Captain Marvel's a badass, and I think it sets everything up very, very nicely for Endgame. So that's all I will say about Captain Marvel. I will not spoil it. Don't worry. These guys haven't seen it yet either. Are you guys planning to see it soon?
Yeah, I would like to, maybe in this coming week. I was waiting. All the Russian trolls put out all their negative reviews on Thursday night, so I was waiting for Derek's report back before I went to watch the movie.
It's very good. Also, I just saw that Rotten Tomatoes has deleted over 70,000 troll reviews, basically.
That's nuts.
They're trying.
It was like the Star. It was like the Solo thing all over again.
Yep, that's they're trying. Crazy. Rotten Tomatoes is trying a new thing going forward to try to get rid of this, but I don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah.
I really don't know what they're going to do, but they've got to get it figured out, because that's all it is anymore, is just people getting on there and trying to bomb movies intentionally, which is why you should go see a movie for yourself and not just focus on reviews. If you think you're going to like the movie, go try it. Go see if you're going to like it. So,
Hey, so Derek, have you put any thought on where it would rank based on our rankings we did earlier?
I would definitely top 10.
Okay.
I haven't really thought about that yet. I always have recency bias.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
I like to wait to rank a movie until it comes out on DVD and I really like watch it a couple more times. Man. Except for Infinity War, like that instantly number one. It was incredible. But I mean it's not Infinity War. No, don't get any illusions there. But it's very good. I liked it. It was fun. Brie Larson is awesome. It was good. It was good.
So I do have a question about her character. Not that I want spoilers from the movie. Yeah. But some of the reviews that appeared not from trolls thought that, like, she was very stoic, like Brie Larson herself. So is that like Captain Marvel? Is that stoic? Is that kind of the character's vibe?
Yes. Like, she okay. was stoic because of the position she was put okay. in and the That's people training her.
I mean, yeah, she's an award-winning yeah. actress. Like, I figured that was the case, but I just wanted to check.
Yes, yes. No, she definitely had to... The situation she was in, she was not supposed to be using emotions.
Got it. So, okay.
Yes. Yeah. Finally, I played some Viva Java Dice last night with Evan on Tabletopia. Now, Viva Java Dice, or Viva Java, is a game that came out a long time ago. It's about making coffee, and that's great. But then they put out Viva Java Dice, which essentially was the first roll and write, if you don't count Yahtzee. So, again, we love Roll and Writes here at the podcast. Right, and I had never heard of it. I had never heard of it either. I listened to another podcast called The State of Games and also Geek All Stars with the creator of Viva Java Dice is on that podcast, and they always talk about it. And so Evan and I were browsing Tabletopia last night looking for a game, and I saw Viva Java Dice. So I thought, you know, this plays in 20 minutes. Let's learn it and play it. And I really enjoyed it. You're rolling dice with different colored coffee beans on them, and then you're either making blends with those coffee beans, or you're researching different types of beans. And I thought it was great. I thought it was a lot of fun. There's a lot of variable powers, so it's got replayability. Evan and I played with 5 powers last night, and so the next time we play, hopefully we'll get 5 new ones. But yeah, it was really fun. I think it will play really well with like 3 or 4 players also. We played 2, and I thought it was a good time. Evan, what did you think about it?
Yeah, I really liked it too. After we played, I looked up the Dice Tower review with Tom Vassell, and he described it as Yahtzee, but with like research, or Yahtzee with power-ups. And I thought that was a really good description, because you're kind of doing a Yahtzee type thing where you're trying to get matches of the colors of dice, which are basically like the numbers of the dice, right? Or you're trying to get different combinations or whatever. But then it's not like Yahtzee where it's just like I get 2 rerolls and that's my turn. It's like I have to do some research and then I'll start to get rerolls. Or maybe I'll have the ability to flip a dice face from one side to its opposite side. So there's a little bit more to it than that. And I always like those kind of things too, because it's like if I was going to sit down and teach somebody who doesn't play a lot of games this game, I'd say think of Yahtzee, but now with this extra element. And so I think that it would be a good one to teach people. Yeah, like Derek said, we learned it together just reading through the rules in about, I don't know, what, 20 minutes maybe? And then played a game, our first game, in 20 to 30. So
yeah, it was pretty quick. From start to finish, like starting to learn the rules to finish, it took us an hour. That
yeah,
was it.
And so, it was fun. And it was
not bad at all.
Yeah, it was competitive. There's some good choices. Like there was a time where I had to decide if I wanted to pursue this certain research. Because when you finish research, you get points. But then you can no longer use that research. And the research that I was pursuing actually hindered me. But it was a big payout at the end. So there was a time where I had to decide, like, do I continue down this road and keep rolling less dice each turn, basically, was the hindrance. So it's going to be harder to complete, but then get the huge payoff, or do I kind of abort this and change strategies? And I stuck with it, and I think it maybe, I don't know. I mean, it was like the final score was like 21 to 19, so it was close. But anyway, there's those kind of decisions, I think, we've talked about before, really make a game good, where you have to weigh the pros and cons. So I liked it. It was very fun.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, I think it's that natural progression from like Yahtzee. I think you could teach this to somebody pretty easily. So, yeah. So that was Viva Java Dice. All right. Well, that's all I had going on. Evan, what about you?
All right. Well, first thing I want to talk about is a couple of weeks ago, I went to my first ever Chainbound event, Keyforge Chainbound event. And I think we've mentioned Chainbound events before, but I'm not sure I've ever explained exactly what they are. So I'll just give a brief rundown. A Chainbound event is an organized play. It's like an official Fantasy Flight organized sanctioned event. And participating stores can put on 1 Chainbound event per week. And they are, as of now, they're of 2 varieties. They're either Archon or Sealed. So Archon means you bring a deck that you already own, and you register it when you get there, and you play with that deck. And sealed is you buy a deck there and you open it and they register it and play with that. So this particular one I went to was a sealed event, which was nice because then I got a new deck. But what they do is they track, they have some software that they'll put the results in and they track each game. And if you win three or four games during the night, then your deck gains chains and they keep those chains in future events. So if I take the same deck over and over and I'm winning, I'm going to be gaining chains, which in Keyforge is a handicap. So you draw less cards as you have chains. So I'm going to start my next game. If I won four games week one and I go week two, I'm going to start drawing fewer cards than my opponent. So I'm at a bit of a handicap. And if I keep winning, maybe I'll draw two less cards at the next event because I've got so many chains. And so it's kind of a way that if somebody opens like a super powerful deck, you know, in your local city and they're just dominating events, eventually they're going to get to the point where it's handicapped and that deck is basically going to have to get retired. So it's kind of a nice way to keep things fresh and make sure somebody's not dominated just because they got a little bit lucky.
Is there any way to lose chains?
Yeah,
like
I think
your deck like goes 0-4 then?
I think you might. I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to look into that, but I think you might. So, I had a really good time. I think with the sealed, it's a little bit weird because obviously everybody's opening a new deck. So then it really, to some degree, there is some luck of the draw there because nobody's going to have any chains in a sealed event. So I went 2-2. I won my first two games and I didn't really like the deck that I opened. It's okay, but it just didn't really fit my playing style. And so my first two games, I was pleasantly surprised that I won. And then the third game, I got destroyed by... Derek, guess what houses were in that deck?
Yeah, I bet I know. I bet it was Shadow Dis.
Yep, I believe it was. It was at least Shadows, and the Shadows cards in that were crazy. So I got destroyed in that one, and then I lost the fourth game as well. So I think when it comes down to it, I'd probably prefer doing Archon events because then the chains become more of a factor. But Sealed is fun in its own way too because it's just like, I was just there to have fun. I got a new deck. I had to learn the new deck as I played it, as did my opponents. So there's a fun element to that too. And all in all, I loved it. I met some cool people and this store that I was at, the game store, they do two a month. They do one sealed a month and one Archon a month. So I'm going to try to make it out to at least one per month. The next one is this Thursday, which is my wife's birthday. So I'm not going to make it to that one, but, hopefully I'll make it out to an Archon event soon.
I mean, you could just take Carla with you.
Maybe. Yeah. She loves
Keyforge. Happy
birthday. Yeah. So, I don't think so. I better not. So, yeah, that was fun. I'm really looking forward to doing more of those in the future. Then I also finished Grand Theft Auto V finally. So I've been trying to get through that storyline. I've had that game for years and never beat the story and like had to start over several times because my game save got deleted and blah, blah, blah. So I finally decided to beat it, and I did, and it was fun. I don't know. There's not much else to say about it. It's a Grand Theft Auto game. So I don't know. I don't know what my next video game endeavor is going to be. I still need to finish, Breath of the Wild. So maybe that. I still need to finish Let's Go Eevee.
Have you played Mario Odyssey yet?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Beat Mario Odyssey. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Well,
so
it is Mario Day and you could get Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe.
I know.
For $40.
I know. I probably
it's a great
won't.
Deal.
I will get it at some point, but I don't know. Not now. but yeah, Derek, you reminded me that I still haven't beat my Let's Go Eevee game, so maybe that.
Yeah, you could. You were talking about transferring your shiny Charizard in. That'd be fun.
How cool would that be?
That would be neat.
That would be cool.
Yeah, and maybe. Well, we have some Pokemon news later, so maybe we'll talk about that a little more later. Over the last week or so, I've been getting back into Critical Role. So Critical Role is most of you have probably heard of it. It's pretty popular, but it's a web series, I guess, where some voice actors play Dungeons & Dragons. And so they are in their second campaign right now. And I personally am only in the first campaign. I'm like towards the end of it. I think I'm getting into the final arc. So I'm really excited to not only see the end of this arc because it's like a storyline they've been building to for a long time. But I'm also excited to get into the second campaign because when Critical Role started, they had already had a campaign for a few years, this group of people. And so when we started, we got to know their characters at like level, I don't know, 8 or 10 or whatever they were. and they're already pretty established. And that was fine. It was fun to get to know the characters, but I would love to see this group of people start from a level one character and build from there. So I'm really excited to get to the second campaign, hopefully fairly soon. Episodes are getting kind of long, so we'll see how long it takes me to get to that. But yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen Critical Role, definitely check it out. The people are so entertaining, and it's kind of like, I mean, I think we've mentioned this before, but Derek and I watching Critical Role is what got us back into D&D in the first place, like 3 or 4 years ago. So it's a great, I don't know. It's great.
And if you're a DM, watching Matt Mercer DM this game will give you so much inspiration and so many ideas for your game. He is phenomenal. He's right. The best DM. So yeah, check it out.
Yeah. And we have some news on that later too. I'm just spoiling all the news right now.
Yeah, you are. You really are.
And finally, Ryan last week was talking about watching Star Wars, which kind of motivated me to go back. So I watched all episodes 1 through 6 with my wife, and she's not a huge Star Wars fan, but she's watched them before with me. And I think that's the only time she's really watched them was like the first time her and I watched them all together, which was like way back when we started dating. I don't know how long ago that was. A while ago.
15 years ago. No,
it was like 8. So anyway, she kind of wanted to watch them again too, because she hadn't seen them in so long. And I don't know what else to say about it, I guess. I really like those movies. 1 through 6, I think, are always going to be my favorite. I know the prequels get a lot of hate. I like them.
They just, for me, I understand people like them and like the nostalgia of watching them, but like they mostly just, I don't know, maybe it's just me. They just don't hold
here.
Up. They just don't
get
hold
out of
up.
That trash.
They're not terrible, but like, I like the other ones better. I mean, 4 through 6 are amazing. I mean, there'll always be some of the, well, other than the Ewoks, but we can get into that on another pod. But
yeah,
I just should have been Wookiees. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I will say, I don't know. Whenever I watch one through three, I do it in the context of the overall story. Like, yeah, the scenes on Tatooine in episode 2 are bad. They're cringy and awkward, and yeah. I don't know. We'll take out my phone and do something during those scenes. But when you look at it, the whole context of the rise and fall of Anakin Skywalker and redemption of Anakin Skywalker, I love it so much. And I also want to say that I think it's the first time I've watched episode 5 and 6 since Solo came out. Mm. And I love like how much Solo added to the original stories. Like I was watching episode 5 and I was kind of nerding out about how cool it was having Solo as like a contextual basis for episode 5, because it's like the last time Lando and Han saw each other was at the end of Solo, presumably. I guess I don't know that for sure, but if you take that into context of when they first see each other in episode 5, it's amazing. So
yeah, I've heard people say that it makes those movies a lot better. And I've also heard that is it Alden Ehrenreich, is that my saying his name right?
I think so. I can't remember
Solo,
for sure.
He's actually spent more time playing Solo on screen than Harrison Ford did at this point.
Really?
Which is kind of crazy to think about. Yeah.
On screen time.
If you add up on screen time,
I guess. Cause
it's
pretty
rad.
Yeah. Cause Han wasn't even like almost half of episode 6. He was frozen carbonite, I guess. So
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, good stuff. Good movies. So that's what I've been up to. Ryan, how about you?
I have been reading The Magicians, or started The Magician series, and I finally started to get into it a little bit this past week. I'm about 2/3 of the way through the first book, and I'm really enjoying that. Derek's description, I won't go into detail, but adult Harry Potter is probably the best way to put it. And then I've played Keyforge with my mentee. So I've been enjoying being able to use that time, one, for the mentoring aspect, but I get to play games with him and like teach him to play games, and hopefully he can enjoy that and maybe pass it on. And he's been telling me that he is actually designing like a one-off playthrough of like a dungeon crawl at the library that he's making himself, and that he's going to be leading some of the kids in his class through. So that's kind of cool.
Awesome.
So
that's cool.
So cool. Like I've been helping him out a little bit with that, giving him some ideas, and he's like building a set, so like it's an actual real life thing that they're kind of going through. So that's kind of cool.
Cool.
And then I've been watching Star Wars Clone Wars. I started picking that up like at lunch if I'm not doing anything, or like kind of in the evenings if I want to watch something for 20 minutes. like, it's kind of nice. It's a fun Star Wars story. They're only 20 minutes long.
Have you watched it before?
I have, yeah. So okay, I'm rewatching right. it. And then I don't know when Disney's releasing the new, if is that this year or next year? I don't know.
Oh, man.
So I'm kind of just, I'm hopefully I can get close to finishing it again by the time they release the new show. And then now that Evan's watched 4 through 6, I haven't watched that. So I kind of want to rewatch that. I watched 1 through 3 and then 7 and 8. And now I want to watch 4 through 6 and then the anthology shows. I just watched Solo, so maybe I won't do that. But that's mostly what I've been up to. Oh, but before I forget, I was going to ask. Tabletopia, is that coming to Switch? Or is that something I just remember? I am like...
I don't know if
Tabletopia would
be on Switch. I'm not sure. Okay. I mean, it'd be cool if it was, but I don't know. I don't know.
I don't remember, so I was just going to see if either of you guys remembered.
I don't see anything about it.
Okay.
You can play in a browser, but I don't think Switch even has a browser. So, and if it did, I don't know that Tabletopia would work very well because it's very mouse driven in a lot of ways,
yes,
right?
It works very well on the computer. Yeah.
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 But I guess if they have an app for it, they could make it work for a Switch too, because Switch has a touchscreen, so it's like a tablet.
Right.
So
right,
yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
So I was curious. I mean, it would be one more check in the column of buying a Switch in the future for me. So I was just wondering what you guys, if you guys knew that or not.
Yes, it's coming to Switch.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm in. So yeah, what do we have up for news? I know Evan's teased a little bit of the news that we've had.
Yeah, Evan spoiled everything. So first up, Critical Role, which Evan talked about, has launched a Kickstarter. So they are going to do the Legend of Vox Machina animated special. It funded in under an hour. They were hoping for $750,000. Currently, they have 50,000 backers, and they've raised over $6.8 million. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So the animation team that's doing it is a team called Titmouse. They are most popular for doing Big Mouth, Venture Brothers, Metalocalypse. Like, they've done a ton of stuff. The writing team is writing a whole new storyline for the animated special. So it's like not anything we've seen on the main show. And just recently, they decided to upgrade this from an animated special to an animated series because of how much support they've got. So what they're going to do is they're doing 2 episodes. They're going to be 22-minute episodes or half an hour episodes, somewhere in there. They're going to do 2 episodes of this brand new arc. And then we're going to get 8 episodes of an arc that's happened in the first campaign. And that's the Briarwood arc, which those of you who are familiar with Critical Role, it's my favorite story arc from all of Critical Role. So I think it's going to be really neat. There's still time left to back this. I don't know how much time is left. So yeah, if you're interested in all at all, head over and back it. I'm so excited to see this. Evan, I know you love the Briarwood arc as well. Like, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I'm super excited for it. And the cool thing is that it's all voice actors that play this game, right? So it's such a natural transition for them to go into an animated series because every single one of them has been on an animated show. Mm-hmm. And if you watch any animated shows, you've probably seen them before or played video games. A lot of them do video games too. Like, the DM Matt Mercer is in Overwatch. He's McCree, and I mean, they're in a bunch of games. So there's so much talent there that just naturally fits into this this medium that they're going to. I think it's going to be really, really well done. So I'm extremely excited about it.
Update: I think they did a 60-day Kickstarter because there are still 40 days left on this Kickstarter.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it doesn't close till April 19th. So, God, just think of how much money they're going to have.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I just opened up the calculator on my computer. It's $136 on average per backer. And I don't know how many backers they could have projected or like how much the average spend of a backer would be. But I would feel like what they have has far surpassed their expectations.
Right. Well, you can back for as low as
and they're not even halfway.
Yeah, you can back for as low as $20 with some benefits. The real benefits come at 50 Like that's mm-hmm. where you get like, you get some art prints and like a sticker set and stuff like that. But it goes all the way up to like, there's 35 spots that were for $1,000 backers. And that like, those are all sold, but that includes like an invite to the red carpet, like premiere of the show, like with the whole cast. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, like they have such a very dedicated fan base, and yeah, I want to know what the final numbers are going to look like on this when it's all said and done. I'll be sure to report back.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next up, Thunderworks Games have announced two new games in the role player universe. So we've talked about role player before, so I won't spend much time on that. But there's two new games that are going to be set in the same world. They won't play anything like role player, but they're going to be set in that same universe. So the first one is called Lock Up, a role player tale. This one was on Kickstarter last year. It's a worker placement game that takes place in a fantasy prison. So each player has a gang within the prison that they assign their members. They're assigning them to different actions, trying to accrue the most resources and avoid the guards and like outfit themselves so that they can escape this prison. And actually, Evan and I were just on Tabletopia last night, and we saw that this was up. So this is definitely a worker placement game that we want to try out. It sounds like a neat theme there. And the second game, and this is the one I'm more excited about, it's called Cartographers. And you guessed it, this is a roll and write game. So I'm very excited. In this game, players are going to be exploring by using like polyominoes, like Tetris shapes, and different terrains to fill out a map, just like you would like draw a dungeon on graph paper in D&D. But you're going to be making your own map as you go. And like, that sounds so cool. Evan, we were talking about this a little bit last night. You seem pretty interested in Cartographers too, right?
Yeah, I'm interested in both. And we were really close to trying out, what was the name of the first one? Sorry. Lockup.
Yep.
And, cause I, for some reason I was like, man, I really want to play a worker placement game. But we decided it was going to be a little long. Today is the day after daylight savings time, so we're losing an hour or so, you know. But anyway, that aside, I'm really excited to try them both. Roleplayer is really cool. I like the game a lot, so I think being in that universe is pretty fun. And I'm excited that Lockup is on Tabletopia, and I would not be surprised if Cartographers goes there soon, unless for some reason they can't figure out a way to make it work in that format.
Right,
but since role player and Lockup are both on Tabletopia, I would assume that this one's going to come. So yep. I think we'll get to try that one. And it sounds really fun. Roll and Write is all the rage. So
yeah, it is.
Well, and they both games come out in July. So like this might be Cartographers might be a Gen Con pickup for me.
That seems like a really cool one.
Yeah, for sure. I want to try them both. I kind of wish I had backed Lockup, but I just didn't really want to lock in the funds at that time. So we'll see, but they both sound really cool, and I'm very excited for those. Next up, Stonemaier Games has issued an apology for the lack of availability of Wingspan. So March 8th, was the official retail release date of Wingspan. And unfortunately, a lot of friendly local game stores had pre-orders for the game, and the pre-orders were not able to be filled. Jamie Stegmaier put out a very heartfelt apology, saying basically that he dropped the ball. He did not think that he had no idea what the demand for this game was going to be, and he produced too few copies. A lot of people are upset because they didn't get the game that they pre-ordered on the release date. And I get it, but at the same time, like I feel like he's handling this the right way and issuing the apology and vowing to make it right. They've already got a second and third print run coming. I unfortunately was not able to get the game. I should have just pre-ordered it right away through Stonemaier Games, but I took a risk that it would be cheaper later and that I could get a pre-order, but I wasn't able to. So the second print run looks like it's going to be out mid-April, and the third print run will be out mid-May. So I'll just have to wait a month, and then I will be getting Wingspan for sure. But the second those pre-orders go back up, I'm going to make sure to lock in no matter what the price is. But yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate situation, but I think Stonemaier is handling it pretty well. Next up, we got a new game announcement from Ryan Lockett, who is the creator of games like Near and Far, Above and Below, and Megaland. The new game is going to be called Sleeping Gods, and it'll be for 1 to 2 players. You're going to take the role of a captain of a ship that's lost at sea. And I think this takes place in like the 1920s, like an alternate reality 1920s. It's an exploration and sandbox game. It's also a campaign game. So each session will last as long or as short as you want it to, and you just kind of mark your progress when you want to wrap it up. It has a unique atlas system is what they're calling it when it comes to the map. So like you're sailing around on this map, and when you reach the edge of a page, you just flip to a certain other page and you just continue sailing. And it's a whole new, like you've revealed a whole new portion of the map and you're just exploring and going on adventures in these explorations. It's just a big campaign and it's a huge like open world sandbox. And it sounds really, really neat. It's going to launch on Kickstarter in July or August. And I think Ryan's already locked into backing this one.
Yeah, I'm committed to backing this one. And I'll probably back most any game that Ryan Lockett releases. Just looking at, I was looking at the Board Game Geek page. And it's, you're right, it's 1929. It's a steamship. And your steamship is called the Manticore. And like you said, you go to the next pages. I'm excited. I just like the style of his games. It's not like choose your own adventure, but it kind of is in that you can continually replay the game and it's always going to be different. And I like that.
I think it's unique that this is a 1 to 2 player game too. Yeah. That's not something you see very much. It'll be interesting. I'm excited for you to back this and and to play it with you. So
yeah cool. I'm excited.
Sorry, Evan.
Well, I mean, yeah. Hopefully I'll get to try it sometime. I still haven't played any of his games, and you guys always talk about him. And I've always wanted to play, too, because the artwork is so cool. And the style sounds cool, too. So one of these times, we'll have to get one of the other ones out. I know that they have, which one did I say? I think it was Near and Far is on Tabletopia. So maybe sometime.
I want to try that one.
I know. We've got... This list is growing on Tabletopia.
I know. And every time I go to Target, I see Megaland, and I'm always tempted to get it.
I like Megaland. I demoed it at Gen Con. I almost bought it. And every time I walk into Target, I almost buy it. it's just like a little like push your luck. And also, like it's a little push your luck game, but it also is like city building, kind of like Machikoro.
Is that the one I played with you?
Megaland? Maybe. Yeah,
so,
you did.
Okay, so I have played Ryan Lockett game. Yeah, that was okay. So I have, and I enjoyed it.
Okay,
right. I demoed it at Gen Con with Evan.
Yep.
All right. Well, next up, we got a new X-Men Dark Phoenix trailer. There's a huge spoiler in it. I'm not going to give that away because some people like to stay away from trailers before movies. It was very unexpected. I'm not going to say anything else. I think the movie's looking better and better each time like I see a new trailer for it. I feel pretty confident that they're going to do Dark Phoenix right. Not like X-Men 3. we won't talk about that. But yeah, I think it looks really cool. Have you guys watched the new trailer?
Yeah.
I have not.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, I liked it. I was really surprised that spoiler you're talking about that they showed that.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a bold strategy to spoil that before the movie even gets.
So will it or won't it like give away how the movie is supposed to go? Like,
well, I don't know. I mean, I would bet that the event that they show happens fairly early in the movie.
Yes,
that's all the reason they'd show it.
Okay.
So it's not a huge deal. Yeah. What I was excited about is that, you know, you mentioned X-Men 3, and the thing that, among a lot of things that was bad about that movie is that it's just like Jean/Phoenix were so, I don't know, it was just so underdeveloped, and it was like, the thing that this trailer focused on was Jean's turmoil as this like dark phoenix thing was manifesting in her, and just I don't know, there's a big kind of emotional scene there. And I will say one of my concerns was how I didn't really like Sophie Turner as an actor or actress. And it looked like she maybe it's just her character in Game of Thrones I don't like. Maybe I don't like Sansa. So I'm pretty excited about it. Yeah. So
I think they set this all up really well with Apocalypse too. Jean's role in Apocalypse. I'm excited about it. It'll be interesting to see. I think I have a hunch this might be the last standalone X-Men movie we see in this universe. But we'll see. I love McAvoy and Fassbender in those roles, and now they have Sophie Turner as Jean. Like, I mean, they could keep going with it. But we'll see how it goes. Moving on, we got some huge Pokemon news. The two newest entries in the Pokemon series were announced, Pokemon Sword and Pokemon Shield. They will take place in the new Galar region. It looks to be reflective of Great Britain in terms of like the landscape and the architectural style of like the art and everything. They released a regional map of Galar and it's gorgeous. I think I shared that in the Discord thread, and I like zoomed in on this high res map, and I was just looking around at all the details and all the towns and everything, and I got so excited for this game. They announced the three new starter Pokemon. There's Sobble, who is a water-type lizard. There's Scorbunny, who is a fire-type rabbit. And there's Grookey, who is a grass-type monkey. And he's the most adorable thing I've ever seen in my life. And he will be my starting Pokemon. That's what I got for Pokemon Sword and Shield. What do you guys think?
I can't wait. This one's it's going to be pre-order day one for me. It'll be the first main series Pokemon game I've played since, Generation 3, maybe? And this is what, Gen 8 is what it'll be considered?
Yes, this will be Gen 8. Yep, okay. A new generation.
So, yeah, I mean, I will echo what you said about the map. It looks amazing. There was, like, one of the big cities was definitely based off London. So that's really cool. I will say the one thing that I was a little disappointed by is it looked like they showed some gameplay, and it looks like they're not bringing over from Let's Go the thing where you can see the Pokemon
on the world map
or like on your as you're walking around. It's going to be more like the Game Boy games where you're walking through tall grass and then the screen flashes and random encounter. That's fine, I guess. I mean, I kind of get why they have to do that, because that's just part of the main series, right? Is that you have you're not just catching Pokemon, you're battling them, and you grind for experience that way, unlike the Let's Go game. So I would have liked to see it, but I'm still good with it. The graphics look nice. I'm really excited to have and I'm sure most of you know, but this is the first Pokemon game, like main series game, that's going to be on their flagship console. It's always been on their handhelds before, the Game Boys and Nintendo DS and whatnot. So the fact that it's coming to Switch is really a huge shift for them, and I'm excited for that.
Yeah, it's supposed to come out late 2019, so look for it right around Christmas, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm the same way. This will be a pre-order day one situation. I'm so pumped. And Ryan, it's finally time to get on the Switch train.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things adding up that I need to play on a Switch, and I don't think I'm going to be able to. With all the games that keep coming out, Derek never lets me borrow his Switch to play these games. So,
but Derek will let you borrow the games. So,
but Derek will let me borrow the games, so I might just need to get one. We'll see.
You really can't afford not to at this point.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, all the money.
All the free games that I can save money.
All right, and finally, this is the biggest news for me personally. We got a Lord of the Rings TV show map update. And this might not sound like a lot, but this is big. So they keep revealing more and more points of interest on the map of Middle-earth. And this week we got a big reveal. They added the island of Numenor. So what's big about this is that it means the show will almost certainly take place in the second age of Middle-earth, because Numenor is destroyed before the third age begins. So the Third Age would be what most people are familiar with from the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Like that's the Third Age. And the end of the Second Age, it ends with Numenor being destroyed. So all the rumors of it being a young Aragorn situation, I think it was either a misdirection or they just completely changed course. So if the show is going to take place in the Second Age, it means we're going to get to see like the rise of Sauron in Mordor, the creation of the Rings of Power, the war between Sauron and the elves on Numenor.
It's going to be so cool.
And eventually the defeat of Sauron by Isildur. So I'm so excited. I know, right? it's cool because the Second Age has always been fairly neglected. So it'll be really exciting to see all the storylines they can pull from that period and where they go with everything. I did read also that they are they're approved for 2 spinoffs also. So that might be the young Aragorn situation. This is huge news, and God, I'm pumped. I'm so pumped. It's going to be cool.
Yeah.
All right. Man. Well, that's all I got for the news. So I'm going to throw it over to Evan to lead our discussion topic.
All right. Well, again, this topic comes as a suggestion from Grey Duck in our Discord server. So again, I'll plug our Discord server if you guys want to chat with us about what we're talking about or give us some recommendations. If you want to hear us talk about something, we would love to have it. We'll have the link up again. We have a whole channel for topic recommendations, and we love to hear those from you guys. So thanks, Grey Duck. And so the topic that he recommended / kind of questions he asked were, he said, TCG, CCG, LCG, what's the state of the industry? Are card games back? Were they ever gone? Has KeyForge changed everything? So before we really dive into some of those questions, we're going to define what some of those are, some of the abbreviations there. So TCG is a trading card game. A CCG is a collectible card game. And an LCG is a living card game. So TCGs and CCGs, I did some research on this actually, and it seems like for all intents and purposes, they're the same thing. And that is what you think of when you think of Magic or the Pokemon trading card game or Yu-Gi-Oh, where you can buy booster packs or starter sets or sets that contain decks. But then for the most part, you're using all these resources to build your own deck. And they have, obviously rules for going up against somebody else. So for the most part, I think a lot of these games we're talking about are going to be competitive 1v1. I'm sure some of them, a lot of games have rules for other formats and stuff, but the kind of core of what they're about is a 1v1, your deck versus my deck type of game. So again, a TCG or CCG, those are your trading, you're collecting, you're buying booster packs, you're putting together to make the best deck that you can. And these type of things have been around for a while. They've been around since basically Magic came out in 1993. And that was kind of the birth of that. So that's what those two types are. I'm going to throw it over to Derek to explain an LCG because I personally have never played one.
So LCG is a type of game that Fantasy Flight created. It's called a living card game. Every time in a living card game that they release a new booster pack or a new core set, all the cards within that set are the exact same for every single person. So when you buy an expansion, you know exactly what cards are going to be in there. Now, an LCG can take 2 different forms. They can be a one-on-one type game, like Magic is. So the Game of Thrones LCG or the Android Netrunner LCG, those would be that type of game where they're 1v1 and you're building a deck and competing against each other. Now, it's sometimes easier to build a deck because hey, this expansion has these exact cards in it, and that's what I need to build my deck, which is kind of nice. An LCG can also be a PvE or player versus environment situation. So it could be like Lord of the Rings LCG is a good example. So Ryan and I have played a lot of Lord of the Rings LCG. So that is, you build your own deck and you get all these expansions, but every time you buy an expansion, it adds, you're playing against like an AI essentially. You're playing against, you're playing a mission and you're trying to beat the mission and succeed. And so every time you buy an expansion, it's got new, like a new story that you're trying to play through, which is pretty neat. They've also recently put out the Arkham Horror LCG. Ooh. which is the same situation. You're playing, it's like Cthulhu themed thing that you're playing through, and you're going on investigations, and yeah, it's pretty neat. But I really like LCGs just because TCGs can really be a money sink. And so the LCG is kind of nice. And don't get me wrong, LCGs can be a money sink as well, because if you like, if you're going to play the Game of Thrones one and you really need a card that you just need an expansion for one card, well, mm-hmm. you got to buy that expansion. Mm-hmm. But in general, like at least for our purposes, when we were playing the Lord of the Rings LCG, I'm only buying expansions to get more story content out of it. Like they come with new cards. Like you still get to build a deck that you're playing against like the stories. So like I would build a deck based around several heroes, and then I would put cards in there that buff those heroes or that work well and synergize with those heroes. So you're still getting the deck building aspect of it. It's just, you're then you're building a deck to take on a story, which is pretty neat. It's a pretty neat concept. Evan, do you want to talk about the top CCGs that have been around?
Yeah, so I kind of mentioned this before, but you know, collectible card games have been around for quite a while, and it started more or less with Magic, which was made by Richard Garfield. We've talked about him before because he was the guy that also did Keyforge, but he was kind of the inventor or the father of this type of game. Magic came out in 1993 and has been the top ever since. It's been, year over year, it's the most popular card game. And then a couple other of the more popular ones is the Pokemon trading card game, which released in 1996 in Japan. I believe it was a little later than that in the US, but it was around that time. And then Yu-Gi-Oh, which came out in 1999. And so those, especially Pokemon, you know, obviously Pokemon draws a lot of its popularity from its, IP, from its intellectual property, which is everybody loves Pokemon, so they got into the game. And I was talking to Derek a little bit when we were discussing this subject, and Derek was like, yeah, you know, I had a lot of Pokemon cards, but I never really actually played the game very much. And I'm probably in that same vein. Like, I played it a few times, but it was more about collecting the cards.
Yeah, it was all about getting those shinies.
Yeah, getting the like, holographic
like nowadays, it's a game that I really would like to get back into. In fact, a friend of mine, we bought like a battle box with two decks in it that were supposed to play against each other, and he was going to teach me how to play again. And we just never have gotten the time to play. So I have a Pokemon deck. I've just never played with it. I love Pokemon, and I like all the new – like they've really made that game a lot better. They just continually improved it, and it's huge still. Like,
yeah,
a lot of people still play the Pokemon TCG.
See, because that would be the thing for me, is that I love Pokemon too, but when I played the trading card game, even as a 10-year-old or whatever I was, like the gameplay didn't really capture. Like, I don't know. It's just like
I remember being that way as well.
Yeah, because it's like you have your Pokemon out, and you can have like, and it could be completely different right now. But when I played back then, it was like you had one out, and then you could have some on the bench, and you could switch them like a Pokemon battle in the games, right, in the video games. And the biggest thing was they had two moves usually, and you had to like power them up with energy for them to be able to use that move. And I don't know, it just felt a little clunky to me sometimes, because it's like, if I don't have my energy, I might have to switch the Pokemon out, but I can only switch a Pokemon out once per turn, and then when I do that, I can't do certain other things. So I
will say that I think like we have like matured, and we probably could play it a lot better now too.
Yeah, I did. Like, I did play one time when I was like 18 though, and I still was like, eh. Yeah, we were over at a friend's house. and he pulled out a big box Pokemon card. So it's like, hey, let's play this. So me and him constructed a deck and played a game.
Nice.
I was kind of like, yeah, I'm not sure, but they were all the old cards. So again, if there's new cards out
Now they've got Mega Evolutions, and like there's a lot more to Pokemon and to the card game. Mm-hmm. I know I've got a friend who he plays like competitive Pokemon League still. And I know like my FLGS still has like Pokemon League weekly. And I know it's like a mix. Like they have different brackets. Like it's a mix between like hardcore players. And then there's a lot of kids that play because it's a very good intro game to like learn a TCG. The rules are still simple enough if you want them to be that it's a good like teaching game to learn how to play TCGs because Magic is not a great teaching game. And some of the themes in Magic are very dark. If you have younger kids, Pokemon might be a good place to start if you want to introduce them to TCGs. Sure. And it's kind of funny because like I went through the natural progression. Like I started with Pokemon and then I moved to Yu-Gi-Oh, which is like the junior high school version of Pokemon. And and it got a little darker. And then when I went to college, I started playing Magic a lot, which is just, it's kind of funny because like that just seems like the natural progression of TCGs. Mm-hmm. But Magic, as far as were TCGs ever gone? No, they were never gone. Magic is still a huge force in the board game or hobby game community. You look at every friendly local game store that sells Magic cards. I read somewhere that Magic cards make up about 75% of their like profits.
That's crazy.
It's insane. It's insane. I'm not saying that's true for all game stores, but game stores that carry Magic and have Friday Night Magic tournaments, have organized play for Magic, like that is a huge, huge, huge portion of their profit. And I think it will be for the foreseeable future. We go to Gen Con and half of the tournament room is Magic tournaments, you know, and there's a professional Magic league, like the Grand Prix. Also, I think I heard that they're going to start paying players like a salary to be part of the professional league rather than basing it all on winnings, which is kind of what Overwatch League did, which would be interesting. I think that would be a good change because that's how you get people to really like commit, like when they have a guaranteed income rather than just like, oh, well, I guess if I lose today, I can't buy groceries because I don't have any money, you know, I better get into a different profession. So I think that's pretty cool. As far as Magic, it hasn't gone anywhere. I think Pokemon is still very strong. Yu-Gi-Oh is still like performs well. I haven't played Yu-Gi-Oh since high school. I haven't, like when I go to the game store, I don't really see a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh cards, but I think the player base is still out there.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it is still, like if you look at the number of sales, it's still top three. I saw an article. I can't remember who posted it or the validity of it, but I think it's legit. That said, it was either November or December of 2018 that the top three we talked about were the top three, and then number four was actually KeyForge, which is interesting. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But I think, it's like you're saying, were they ever gone? No, especially not to the community that plays them. And those communities have stayed strong. Now, I will say there have been some things that have come along to kind of spark the whole industry every now and then. I think the introduction of LCGs was one of those. I personally started hearing more about card games as LCGs got popular with the Lord of the Rings and the Game of Thrones ones and Netrunner as well. And then I think another big thing that boosted the popularity of card games would be the rise of digital card games. So this would be like Magic. I think Magic was pretty smart here to as video games got more popular, as like Steam and these platforms became more popular, they ported some of their cards over to a digital format and released several games that were basically just playing Magic but online. So they did a really good job of kind of changing with the industry, or changing, you know, with the world, kind of growing as the internet became more popular and making that available. But then another huge one that came out was Hearthstone. So Hearthstone is a Blizzard game, and it's set in the World of Warcraft or the Warcraft universe. And you said, Derek, you said it's actually based off a physical game like the Warcraft trading card game, right?
So Cryptozoic made a World of Warcraft trading card game, and I actually played it, and it was very fun. It was like you had a class that your deck was based around, and you would use abilities and cards and monsters in that class to fight against each other. And they actually had PvE decks also. Like I had the raid, if anybody remembers Naxxramas, like I had a Naxxramas like PvE setup. So like you would build your deck and you would go through and fight like the bosses and the minions in Naxxramas. And it was really good. It just didn't take off. I don't know. But then they came up with Hearthstone, and most of it is the same. I mean, obviously they changed some things, but I think it does work a lot better in a digital setup. But yeah, it was originally a TCG, and it was very fun.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I played Hearthstone for a while when it first came out, and I really liked it. I still think its mechanics are really fun. I love the fact that you have a class. So yeah, I mean, the basic of that game is that you're trying to deal damage to your opponent, and you're both playing as a... In Hearthstone, you're actually a character from Warcraft. So if you're playing as the mage class, you're Jaina, right? That's her name.
Yep.
Or, you know,
there's... if you're a druid, you're Malfurion. Yep. You're like, yeah, yep.
And the thing that's really cool about that is it's kind of got a variable player power aspect of it, where Jaina's power is that she can just deal 2 damage every turn, if I remember right, or maybe 1, either the opponent or to a creature on the battle line. But it really adds some interesting mechanics there. And then they make it so that some cards are class specific. So when I'm building my deck, you know, if I get a really good priest card, I maybe will start using the priest character because I've got a good card for it. So it makes you have to be able to adapt and learn these different powers, as well as put together the decks that are, you know, that God, you have the cards for and everything.
You're making me
yeah, I know.
Hearthstone again.
I know. Well, so, okay. But here's the thing. Let's talk about that, though. We've all played it, right? Ryan, you've played it, too?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And none of us played anymore, right?
Correct.
And so what would you say, why is that? I mean, I know my answer, but what do you guys think? It's the chase, right? You're trying to get these good cards, and it's all about getting lucky or spending the money. And I think that's, to me, that's just the thing that I get why Blizzard did it, obviously money, but it just ruined it for me, you know?
Right. Well, I think we had a friend who was big into Hearthstone, still plays Hearthstone, and he didn't spend any money on it, but he got all the good cards because he played so much.
He played a lot.
And then it was really hard to battle him, and I don't think that was the reason, but it just kind of fell off for me. But I think, like, if I was just playing you guys and we had like normal decks built, like, I think it would still be really fun, and I think I would enjoy it. They've also added PvE elements, but I think you have to pay for those. Like, you might have to buy a DLC.
You have to buy the DLC to do it.
Yeah, which is fine. Like, they still offer the game for free. Mm-hmm. You know, those people that want to go spend the money on packs and stuff, like, that's fine. More power to them. But I still think for what it is, like, you could still play for free and still have a good time with Hearthstone.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like what Evan said, though, that's kind of why I got out of it. I mean, it's either going to sink a lot of money, or you're going to have to sink a lot of time like our other friend did, or get lucky, or a combination of two of the three.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think that kind of brings it back to the state of, I got two thoughts here. So I think you can relate that back to any TCG, is that in order to really be competitive, you're going to have to sink money into it. And I don't know, like I've said it before, I wanted to get into Magic for years. And I know, Derek, you did play it. And Ryan, you bought a few decks, right? But I don't know, did you end up playing very much?
I played a little, but I mean, I never, outside of buying a couple decks and just playing around, I never really did anything seriously.
So I played pretty competitively, but the funny thing is I don't like going to like the game store and playing in the tournament.
That seems
like
a lot of character.
Yeah. I just don't, I don't know. I get nervous when I go to those things and I play random people. And I don't know if it's because I'm worried like people are going to be like dicks or like, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I loved, like, I had a group of like five friends that we played Magic a lot and it was awesome. And I spent a lot of money and I built these amazing decks. Well, then they moved away and then I had poured all of this money into these decks and I had nobody to play them with. So that's why I stopped playing Magic. Now, if I had somebody like right here who wanted to play Magic, yeah, I would get back into it. I would build a deck and we would just play each other. They have more options now too for just like buying two pre-built decks that play well against each other. I think Ryan, we did that at one point.
We did. It was like I don't remember exactly what they
were. Yeah, but that was a lot of fun. Like that, I mean, it was still Magic and it was still fun.
And it wasn't a huge cost. Like even to do it over a weekend, it was kind of a fun.
Right. Like I like the deck building aspect of it, but I like, it's such a money sink that I don't think I will ever like get back into that, like into Magic that way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so my other thought too is, and it kind of relates to what you were saying, you have these decks that you spend a lot of time and money on and everything. But could you imagine trying to get back into Magic with those decks now? I mean, it wouldn't work, right?
Right. All of those cards are not like legal anymore. So the way it works is they release like three sets a year. And when like so you would release your first set, second set, third set. Now, when the next set releases the next year, that first set that released would not be legal anymore. It would go out, but you could still use set two and three. And this new set, like that's the way it works. So there will be three sets that are active at once, which is, I mean, it's a great business model for Wizards. Yeah. Like it's an absolutely great business model and it keeps people building new decks and everything. But there's a new format that's becoming very popular. And I don't remember what the term for it, but basically I think it's like any card from like 2012 or 2013 on is legal. Which is kind of nice. Like you can just, it makes it a lot cheaper to build decks and you can go back and find cards that aren't crazy priced and build a fun deck. And it's just more of a casual format, which is nice.
Yeah. That's interesting too. I guess I didn't know about that form, or I've probably heard you talk about it, but I didn't think about it. So, I mean, I think part of the reason too, that these card games and especially Magic has stayed around is by doing things like that, because we hinted at it last week when we were talking about the new Keyforge set. I believe Derek and I both mentioned power creep. So power creep is just kind of a natural progression in these style of games, right? Where the designers want to come out with something new or something fun, a new mechanic or whatever. And they do their best, I'm sure, to balance it, but it's just not going to happen where the new cards that they come out with are going to be able to do something that the old cards didn't. And there's going to be some unintended consequences there where basically just like your base cards are going to be more powerful in the future. Like the current base cards are going to be more powerful than the base cards back in the day. Mm-hmm. And it just makes the older cards hard to play. So I think that Magic has done a pretty good job. And I'm assuming some of these other ones, if they're still around, of figuring out a way to balance that.
Yeah, and I think like at the time we were playing Yu-Gi-Oh, like the original Yu-Gi-Oh cards that came out, like a monster that didn't require like you to sacrifice another monster, like the strongest ones were like maybe a 1500 or 1600 attack. Well, they didn't do like set rotations for a long time, and it got to the point where there were monsters that required no tribute that were like 1900 or 2000 attack. And it just made it so the original cards were completely worthless and were not like, they had no place in the game. So I think they've changed that now. They've made restricted cards. I'm sure they've set rotated. It's been so many years since I played Yu-Gi-Oh, but at the time, like power creep was a very real thing and it was very obvious, you know, like the original cards just weren't worth it anymore.
Right. So I guess, you know, with all the, taking in all this discussion, I think card games are very much still alive and there's more options than ever, you know. You mentioned the Arkham Horror living card game. I know that my brother-in-law was telling me he recently got that and was playing with a friend. He said that it didn't blow him away, but he's kind of excited to keep going with it because, like you said, Derek, there's like a, I think he was saying there's like a leveling aspect to it. So it's almost got a legacy game feel where
that's
you're
kinda cool.
Playing through stories and scenarios and you're,
yeah, I think you can level up your researcher or your investigator. Yeah.
There's those kind of things. And then there's also, the trading card games are still very much there. And then there's also Keyforge. So Keyforge we've talked about a lot, but, in this context of where it fits in with other card games, I think for me, I've said this before, but it really solves a lot of these problems that I had with card games, and that's why I'm so drawn to it. So for me, it's like the perfect mix of having a competitive 1v1. I have, you know, this is my deck, and I'm going to use it to the best of my ability, but then I don't have to go out and find cards, and I actually don't even like deck building that much. I'm not very good at it. So for me, it solves a lot of those problems. You know, does it change the industry? Has it? Yeah, and one of Great X questions was, has it changed everything? I don't think so. I think it's just added another option. That's my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. It's got its own niche market, and just like LCGs do. And I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I think it's going to stick. I think it's carved out its own little piece of the market. And I think it's going to be here for a while, at least. I mean, several years.
Let's hope.
Which is neat. And I mean, that's the greatest thing about like the hobby industry is there's always something new. There's always something crazy around the corner. And hopefully we just keep getting better and better card games out here and, you know, look forward to it.
Yeah, and I think that, like you were saying, it's things kind of build off of each other, right? So Keyforge wouldn't exist without Magic, obviously, and neither would Pokemon, neither would Yu-Gi-Oh! And LCGs wouldn't exist without trading card games. And I think that it's kind of just like an open market type of thing, right, where these companies are trying to make the best games possible, and it's really a plus for us as the players because we're going to keep getting better and better games. Mm-hmm. And I think some of these existing games have adapted well enough that, like Magic, I mean, it's still around 20 years later, 25 years later, whatever it's been, because of, I can't do math. What would that be? Whatever. Doesn't matter. because it's been able to adapt. And I guess, you know, Keyforge, maybe it hasn't changed everything, but I could see Magic in response wanting to do something. And maybe they already have, right? They you've been talking about these pre-constructed decks that they can get. And they've been doing that since before Keyforge, but I could see them wanting to push that.
Like, Commander is huge in Magic right now, too. Like, there's just different, they keep coming out with new formats for their game. And Magic's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And, will 20 years later, like 20 years from now, Magic will still be around.
Yeah.
It's not going anywhere.
No. Well, and the kind of the interesting thing to, because I mean, it was kind of Magic kind of started it all and like has kind of dominoed all these other games. But Evan was saying something interesting, like before we got on, is that Magic was actually, didn't you say it was created because they wanted to fund a different game?
I think Derek was talking about that actually.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember the name of the game, but yeah, Richard Garfield, they wanted to make a different game, but they needed to fund it. So he just like really quickly came up with this like card game that they could sell a bunch of cards and make money. And it was to fund this other game that nobody remembers what that game is because nobody cares because they made Magic.
Right. It's crazy to me because like 5, 6, 7 years later, like here we are with, I mean, all these different card games now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess in summary, card games are here. They've always been here since Magic, and they're here to stay, I think. And if you're into that kind of game, it's a great time. It's not a great time for your wallet, maybe, but there's so many options. And I mean, honestly, I think that they're different enough that you could get into several games and have a good time. Again, if you have the resources and time to do so. For me, I'll probably stick with Keyforge. We talked about Hearthstone. Maybe I'll check it out again here in a little bit. But, you know, I was talking to my brother-in-law, and he's been into Keyforge. He got Arkham, and he just texted me earlier this week that he's getting into the Transformers trading card game too. So, You know, if you're into it, you got all these options, and they play differently. I should mention too.
I forgot to mention that Magic has an online, like, free to play. It's called Magic: The Gathering Arena, and it's free to play. You can build your own deck. Once you play enough, kind of like Hearthstone. Once you play games, you get more packs that you can build decks around. But yeah, it's totally free to play. If you want it to just be free, you can obviously buy decks and stuff. But yeah, that might be something to check out too, if you guys want to try out Magic.
Yeah, cool. I still need to play that at some point. I've always wanted to. And again, KeyForge kind of scratched that itch, yeah. But like, it's Magic. Yeah. I got to play it sometime. I've never played one game.
I can teach you. Okay. We'll figure that out. Yep.
Okay, yep. Cool.
I'm excited. I know we've mentioned it before, but I think the thing that's going to tip the table for me to change subject just a smidge to get a Switch is that Lord of the Rings LCG is going to be on the Switch.
Yep. And that would take out a lot of like the fiddliness, like a lot of the setup and everything. Having it digital.
So. Is that just two player?
It's one or two. Hmm.
Dang.
Yep.
Well, still. I have to check that out. Derek, let's check that out sometime.
Okay. Ryan, all right.
If you get a Switch, I will play with you. It comes out later
2019. I was just looking it up.
Okay. Perfect. We're in. We got a lot on our plate. Let's do it.
I know.
Let's do it.
I know. All right. Well, that is our take on card games. So if you have any thoughts, let us know. As always, we'll have the socials in the description. We'll have the Discord link in the description. We love having people in there to talk to. I also, you know, with all these games we've been talking about on Tabletopia, I would love to sometime just like send out a message to our listeners that are on Discord and say like, hey, let's play a game sometime. So we should do that sometime, guys. This is unscripted. Springing it on these guys, but let's, if you want to play games with us, join our Discord. We'll try to get that set up at some point. So that is all we have for this episode. We thank you all for listening. And we hope that you're getting some good games in. And again, we love to hear from you. And we hope you have a good couple of weeks. And we will catch you next time.